Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Welcome to the inaugural episode of Peter's Podcast. I'm going to be chatting with yogi Jenny Bloom in just a moment. We're going to talk about yoga and a little about me as well. During the interview, I refer to the podcast as Beyond Yoga, but I've since learned that a clothing company is already using that name. I don't want to create any confusion or conflict, hence we're Peter's Podcast instead. Later in the show and in the show notes, I tell you how to support this podcast using patreon.com at any level that you like. So here we go. Thanks for being here. Here's the interview. Hi, this is Peter Furco. This is the podcast Beyond Yoga, where we talk about yoga, life, yoga and life, and all other things that are related to finding something that's like happiness, but much more permanent. And for this first podcast, my dear friend and student Jenny Bloom is going to do me the honor of interviewing me so that I can tell you a little bit about myself and not have it sound like a big long monologue. So,
great.
Welcome, Jenny.
Thanks, Peter. It's really good to be here. So right out of the gate, got a question. So what is like happiness but more permanent? Is that like a tattoo?
Most people are in the pursuit of happiness. It's even built into the Constitution of the United States that we have the right for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But happiness, in the way that most of us think about it, that we're going to be in this state in which we're always blissful or something, isn't really a part of the human condition. The human condition is much more a matter of we do things get done to us, right? We have these sort of experiences of living in which circumstances present themselves. And I think most people have a kind of a reasonable expectation that at some point during my life, I'm going to get the circumstances such that I'm going to be happy. And then life becomes this series of disappointments that you can't get the circumstance, or you get the circumstance you thought was going to make you happy, and it didn't bring you that continuous non-up and down thing. So what is beyond happiness is what yogis call, because yogis always talk in Sanskrit, they call it santosha. Mm-hmm. And the word most usually gets translated as contentment. And it's that you're okay with the circumstances, that you feel good, you feel in equanimity or in balance, or in you feel like this is good regardless of the circumstances. So finding that requires you to be in a relationship with everything that happens that is accepting things as they are, which doesn't mean you let yourself get walked on or you don't try to change the world or anything like that, but it's that as you do all those things, you are okay with what comes. So you may in any moment say, wow, you know, this is an injustice. This needs to be tackled. I'm going to do X. So you do X. Mm-hmm. And when you're done with doing X, you're like, I did that. What do I need to do now? And maybe it's I need to double my efforts on X, or maybe it's that now that X is handled, I need to do Y, or something along those lines. But so, you go ahead.
So you're giving us so much. You're giving us so much. I just wanted to kind of scale back a couple of the things that you said were really interesting to me. One of them is about disappointment and how, you know, in life, like I think everyone can experience disappointment, and sometimes it can really take you down, especially when you think something is going to go a certain way and then it does not go that way. And so how do you think yoga practice, because I think, how does yoga practice relate to that? Because I think a lot of people see yoga as like an exercise.
Yeah, which is why I wanted to call this Beyond Yoga, mm-hmm. where yoga maybe is in quotes, mm-hmm. Because most people's vision or view of yoga or understanding of it is so completely limited. Yoga is a practice that has, in most schools, they think of it as having eight parts. Eight major pieces, and those major pieces lead you from what you might call, like in an evolutionary scale, where you start as a kid and then you become an adult. You could think of it as you start as an adult and you end up as a yogi, right? Like you end up with this different kind of understanding of who you are, the way things work, how you deal with things, what are your actions, what is the result of your actions, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So the part that most people begin with, in the West for sure, is what you see in pictures of yoga, which is doing something with your body. And from the outside, or if you're used to doing exercise or going to a gym or something, that just looks like some kind of stretching or some kind of maybe trying to balance or
hold. Trying to touch your toes.
Yeah, or standing on your hands or something like that. But all of those pose kinds of things are really about, A, learning how to concentrate, using your physical body as a laboratory, mm-hmm. for how do I take myself from my normal mental state of looking around and being distracted by things, but instead to focus it on something. And you have your body, it's very present.
Yeah. So I just want to say what you said again, because that was really interesting. So you said using yoga is about using your body as a laboratory, so you can
see the postural part.
The mm-hmm. postural part, at least, like that, the perspective on the postural part is using your body as a laboratory to see where you were, right? And I think I paused you right there, but like, what happens, like, if the body is a laboratory,
mm-hmm.
like a scientist, like I would go and I would have beakers and I would have, like, I'm not a scientist, but yeah. like pens
and machines, yeah.
Machines, right? Yeah. And a clear surface where right. I would study something.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so what are we studying? So
in yoga, you're studying yourself. You're trying mm-hmm. to come to an experience of yourself mm-hmm. that lets you know who you are and to know how things affect you and to know how you can make changes in all of those things that bring you into happiness, really santosha, mm-hmm. right? To mm-hmm. find this contentment with mm-hmm. what is, mm-hmm. which can be dynamic. I mean, mm-hmm. it can be excited about what right. is, but the excitement isn't one that wanes, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like mm-hmm. you come to a relationship with life, mm-hmm. that life is wondrous and amazing and mysterious, mm-hmm. and you know, all the words that you read when you look at like mystics and even religious things where they have experience of something that's beyond, and it sounds very poetic. It's because it's beyond our normal mental activity. We're not just like looking through our eyes and seeing something and just it's flat, like a scientist in a lab where you're just recording a something. Mm-hmm. The best scientists are filled with wonder and amazement, and as poets are, they're like finding brilliant ways to talk about things, or, you know, any artist really. But
that sounds wonderful, but I live in New York City. So yeah. Like, I mean, that doesn't sound like, I know I have friends who've gone to India. I know a lot of people who are always like seeking or searching, and I don't really understand how it would be possible. Like, I mean, I'm sort of being facetious because like I study yoga in New York City and I think it is possible, but I want to hear what you have to say about like bridging the gap between New York City living and this like capitalistic American cultural thing that we're all doing.
Yeah. Well, the thing that we're all doing this in, mm-hmm. I mean, we're all doing many things where yeah. people are different, you know, but there's the capitalist equation mm-hmm. is if I get something
mm-hmm.
and I use it,
mm-hmm.
right, I will be in this state of happiness and whatnot.
Right.
And, you know, our teacher, Alan Finger,
he would like that
says, you know, that he loves statistics, right? Uh-huh. So he says, you know, that kind of happiness, what you get from getting something,
mm-hmm.
lasts 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Steve Ross, who's a yogi in LA, wrote in his book Happy Yoga that you're happy when you get something, because for that moment when you got it, you stop desiring something else,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's that condition
mm-hmm.
that brings you the happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm talking about. That's mm-hmm. what's beyond.
So just to re-say what you're saying in my words, like, mm-hmm. so you're talking about, so that happiness, when it, like the happiness that you get when you get something isn't about the thing that you're getting. It's about the experience of not wanting anything in that moment, that like, that sometimes that wanting, because like, I mean, so you, because you saw me do some serious online shopping before we did this, and I was like completely sucked into my computer, and I had to do it. I really had to do it. I think you tried mm-hmm. to talk to me, and it just was not going to happen until I got the things that I wanted, and then I was like, oh, you know, relief. God right. knows why. But that you're saying that that relief that I experienced was more so about, I mean, yeah, I want those things, but it's also the pressure of wanting something badly can really cause us to be not happy.
Yeah. Wanting something
yeah.
and not wanting something mm-hmm. are both forces that move you away from santosha.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah. is it about not wanting things?
It's about being content,
mm-hmm.
right? So there are 8 limbs of yoga,
mm-hmm.
and you use all of them
mm-hmm.
to come to a place where you're contented with what is, whatever it is. And mm-hmm. you might want something, but you don't have the same distraction away from your happiness from it. In other words, I won't be happy until I get enough money, or I would be happy if only I had X job,
mm-hmm.
or if I get that thing that I'm online shopping for, I'm going to be so much better than.
Right, right? My whole life
will
all
be of
perfect.
Those kinds of thoughts
mm-hmm.
are taking you away from truth. They're
mm-hmm.
taking you away from the reality of who we are,
mm-hmm.
which is that our happiness
mm-hmm.
doesn't come from things outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness is a state of being.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it many ways. Yoga is like a technology for finding it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the yoga that you do just in the gym,
mm-hmm.
right? Doing the postures,
mm-hmm.
trying to accomplish them,
mm-hmm.
right? So like if you can do a handstand,
mm-hmm.
then I will be happy,
mm-hmm.
is just like saying, if I buy X online,
mm-hmm.
then I will be happy.
Right. It's just a way of tricking your mind into something. Or
it's this natural tendency we have to
mm-hmm.
go toward things that
in
we
the
want. There's a survival piece to it.
Mm-hmm.
Going and getting things I want, like
mm-hmm.
food,
mm-hmm.
will also help me survive.
Right. You said something interesting. You said it's a technology. You said yoga is a technology.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
Earlier we said it was a science,
mm-hmm.
right? A sort of a studying of oneself.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a technology in that you learn how to use the human machine in the most appropriate way in order to accomplish something, right? So if I were a person from the 19th century and I stumbled upon this MacBook Pro,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know how to do anything with it. It would be a lump of metal.
Right.
But I know how to use this technology to record a podcast, to write a novel, to do all kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, yoga is a technology for how to work with a person me in the case of my own practice in order to come to santosha, right? And santosha allows me to get beyond what most people think of yoga as if they've only seen it, say, practiced in a gym or something, and to get to a place where you know yourself and you tap into the wholeness of yourself, which is, there's so many ways to say that. Some of them sound very poetic, but let me just use an example from history that maybe one can relate to. Any Joe, like thinking about the nature of their place they live, might just look up and see black with sparkly dots in it, and then in the day they see the ground, and then they might see a river or something like that. But Albert Einstein, when he looked at the nature of himself, didn't just use what he was seeing through his eyes, but looked at a whole complete transcendence of the normal way of seeing things to visualize the nature of the world in ways that took another 50 years to prove, and all turned out to be right. Right? So yoga is like, how do you tap into that part of your brilliance, that part of your mind, what some yogis might translate in English as consciousness? How do you capture, how do you get to that part of consciousness that lets you see things so clearly that no one else can even figure it out for 50 years?
Right? Yeah. Wow.
So that's what everyone could get to, not necessarily in Einstein's realm of thinking, because Einstein was his gift or his unique, what yogis would call karma, had to do with physics.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
But each of us has a perspective, a brilliance. We're all like facets of this thing that's happening that we call the universe or life or however you want to say it. Mm.
We'll be right back with more of the interview by Jenny Bloom about yoga and a little bit about my history. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, please support Peter's podcast by subscribing. You can set your own value for the information and effort it takes to make this podcast by contributing whatever amount you choose at patreon.com/peterspodcast. There's a link in the show notes, or just type in patreon.com/Peter's podcast, all one word. And thank you for listening.
Can you talk a little bit more about like how we can open up our unique gifts? And maybe tell us a little bit about how you've done that?
Sure. Well, I started with a fascination for the arts, because when I experienced art, it brought me to this place of wonder. It felt like, wow, you know, often it was an emotional thing. I would feel overwhelmed by how magnificent this painting was, or how the light and the painting interreacted, or if I went and heard some music that I was just bowled over by. So I worked in the arts, and I heard about meditation and yoga and decided to try it. And what I found was that it helped me get calmer, because being in the arts is incredibly stressful, and being a person is incredibly stressful. And so it became this thing that I was really interested in. So I pursued it more. And some of the things that yogis talked about, kind of like in this conversation here we're having, I heard about them and I was like filled with wonder about that, you know, and it seemed like, this is interesting because it's talking about the same kinds of reactions I was having to these pieces of art. And so I started to think, I wonder, is this yoga thing a way that you have that experience more of the time? Because the reason I went into the arts is because I wanted to have that experience all of the time, right? And I've found that yoga is a way of tapping that part of me that is related to that, right? So I'm not always like on some kind of high or always like, you know, ecstatic.
Although you do always look very happy to me. And I'm always like, how does Peter look so happy? How?
I mean, I think it is an outcome. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that when you practice and you tap into this aspect of yourself, you go through life in a different way. You go through, you know, Alan, again, to give my teacher the kudos that he deserves, you know, calls it living more gracefully, you know, that you deal with the situations and the circumstances and the challenges that we all have in a more graceful way. And it starts to look like a little magical because you're just dealing with it. And so because you're not all caught up in the reactions to it and the stories that you tell and all of the, you know, patterns that you keep replaying and the insecurities that you have and all of the natural human emotional stuff that we take on from our childhood to our adulthood, right, in that part of the evolution, when we're all caught up in that, we don't necessarily see the thing that's right there in front of us that's so obvious.
Right. And we get so caught in whatever we think is really going on, which is usually a projection of something that happened before or the same patterns that we've seen over and over again. Right.
Because we haven't learned the lesson, which is usually it's not about the circumstances. Mm-hmm. It's about how do you stay contented, how do you stay in santosha while dealing with those circumstances? Mm-hmm. Because then you'll be able to tap that Einstein brain, right? Mm-hmm. You'll be able to go and have not just your sensory data and processing that data, but how do I tap the, you know, pick a word, wisdom, the insight, the inspiration, the creativity.
And I, you know, and I think also what's interesting about like these words like contentment or santosha, like what that means to for me is like, how do I let where I am in my life be like okay?
Right.
Even if it's not where I thought I would be, or even if it's not like, you know, what other people's lives on Facebook look like.
Right. Yes, we're very good at comparing ourselves to other people.
I recently saw this book that was written, and the title of the book was Everyone is Perfect When You're a Liar.
Yeah. Everyone looks perfect from the outside too. Yeah. And most people are having challenges. And, you know, you don't like this idea that the happiness doesn't come from things is all you have to do is look at people who got the things that you want.
Yeah.
And see, are they now the ecstatic person that you're hoping you're going to be when you get that thing, right? You know, famous people. Right now we have a president who said, wow, this is a lot harder than I thought, right? Which implies that he thought this was going to be like fun or something, right?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But totally.
But I mean, even people at this level, right? Actors who have nervous breakdowns, you know, I mean, there's so many things. People who are famous, people who are rich, you know.
But I think what's interesting about this idea is that oftentimes we get attached to the end result and we think that the like achieving the end result is really what we want, but really what we want is some small little piece of it. Like maybe we want companionship, or maybe we want to be seen, or there's always something like really small and vulnerable that's like at the core of like any of these like bigger things that we're looking at in the world. And I think it's really hard in our world to actually turn inwards or to have an experience of that. And so maybe you have some thoughts about the turning inwards, or maybe you don't see it that way at all.
No, it is very much about that, because if you're not looking for your contentment outwards mm-hmm. from something outside, then it can only come from inside. Mm-hmm. And when we look inside, mm-hmm. we find all the reasons we've been looking outside, because we have to deal with our inside, right? Mm-hmm. We have to deal with our stuff. And the cool thing about yoga is it allows you to work on that stuff from many different places. So you might go to a therapist and be asked to talk about your history, and that's sort of the place you can deal with it. Whereas in yoga, because there are these eight different parts, you can be working on yourself in a variety of ways. If you work on yourself physically, you start to feel better, you start to release tension in your body, and it has this interesting effect, because we are holistic beings, of making you feel less tense emotionally, which allows you to look at yourself mm-hmm. without so much holding and tension behind it, which maybe allows for you to face something that's been hard to face, right? Mm-hmm. We work with breath in yoga, which is a connection to your nervous system and your energy system, yogis would say, and allows for a shift in your energy that might open up the possibility of changing something without having to go back and say, oh, this is because my uncle did this to me when I was 4, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But the change could take place mm-hmm. anyway. Mm-hmm. And maybe at some point down the road, you would say, holy crap, that's because mm-hmm. I was doing that. And the first time that ever happened was back when I was a kid. You know, so it's not that mm-hmm. the thing is wrong or right. It's mm-hmm. just that you can get at it a different way through this technology.
And I you know, and it's interesting because it's also really about the teacher. Like, I mean, I don't think either of us think that Western therapy isn't valuable. Like, it certainly is, and it has its place. But one of the things that I've experienced in yoga, in really in having like a teacher, like a true teacher, somebody who really has been through it and has spent years. How many years have you been studying?
32 years.
32 years of studying yoga, like at the feet of your teacher. Like, that's, you know, like that's a different thing. And, you know, because yoga is everywhere now, anyone can have a fantastic experience in a class, but there's something that you're talking to and talking about that's even more deep. And it's about the teacher, I think. And it's about the teacher and meeting with the teacher in person and being able to cultivate a practice and do it over time. And those are some of the most important things.
Yeah. The Yoga Sutras, which is a textbook on how to do yoga, the mm-hmm. the real whole thing yoga, mm-hmm. Has one of the four chapters is on how to practice. How do you do this mm-hmm. in order to have this big experience that we're talking about, this holistic yoga? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it mentions the importance of the long practice with in sort of intensity. You know, you have to be devoted to it, because your mind is so good at being tricky and moving
and telling you that you don't need to practice today everything is fine and there's no reason to practice.
Yeah.
So is yoga something people should be going to class to do every day?
Well, you know, class, it depends on what happens at the class. There's much more to the yoga, this whole eight limbs or eight pieces, and knowing which of them you need to do is where the teacher comes in. And all of the classic texts on yoga say, and you should learn this from a teacher mm-hmm. who understands it.
How do you know who's your teacher?
You know, you know who's your teacher from a combination of things. In everything that involves sort of insight and inspiration and whatnot, it's important to trust your feeling about it, your sense that, there's something to this. But we can, because the mind is so tricky, get really fouled up between what is the feeling, what's my intuition, what's this deep sense in my heart, I knew in my heart that this was the right thing, versus, that guy's cute, let's pick him as my teacher, right? So,
which is what all your students say about you. It's true.
Thank you. But you have to apply discernment to that, right?
Yes.
Because people who hear voices, some of them are receiving, you know,
some of them
the
are
Bible.
Channels, and yeah, some of them are schizophrenic.
Some of them are schizophrenic, right? So there needs to be this discernment that you test what you're thinking against reality in the best way that you can, and then you have to make your best choice. But I think people find teachers, because teachers have an energy, and since we've been using Sanskrit a lot, teachers have shakti, this energy about teaching. You know, like I think all of us have had an experience where someone just moved us. Like we met someone and you were just like, wow, I really liked that person. Or that person was really, there's something about them. And if it's like someone who you're maybe romantically interested in, it reads as one thing. If it's someone who you just think goes, wow, they're so polite or they're so something, you might say they were so charming, right? And so when you meet a teacher, it's the same kind of thing. There's an energy about it. And it should read as, this person is somebody I can learn something from. I'd like to spend some time listening to that person. And
something I want to add to that also is being able to be present with yourself in that experience. I think, you know, I've met a lot of teachers in my life, and some of them are like enthralling and like, you know, it's almost like that romantic thing where it feels like you're like, oh my God, I need to hear everything this person has to say. Like it just, it's almost like this, like, you know, like anxiety around it, you know? And then the teachers that I have now and who I've cultivated actually didn't care very much one way or the other, whether I came to their class. They were always very pleasant, but like, it didn't make or break them. Like they, you know, it actually, one of the real things that these teachers showed me was that there was space for me to come into that relationship. And it wasn't because they needed something from me. And, you know, having met a lot of people in like the spiritual world with a lot of different agendas and objectives, like I want to add that, because I think that's, and I've always felt warmth from you, and you've been my teacher for like 5-6 years now. You taught me in both of the teacher trainings, and you were my mentor, and I continue to come to your class and to work with you, like even after I finished the teacher training.
Right.
Because, and I can say that to like our listeners and to you, like it's because I knew that you were holding something that I could grow in. That you, because of your personal work, because of your integrity, and because of everything that you have done in your life, that created a container, that created a space for me to discover myself, and also to have you, to be like, hey, Peter, this is my life. And you always know what to say. And I really want to thank you. And
you're welcome. Yeah. Or as we say these days, no problem. Yeah, I wrote this book called Yoga for Artists, and it's sort of an encouragement for artists to check out yoga. And because this teacher component is so important, I say, you know, I'm not going to teach you how to do yoga in this book. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it might do for you. Here's a little bit of things to practice, but go find a teacher. Here's how you find one. And then I talk about the qualities of a teacher that you can look for. Mm-hmm. So,
and where can our listeners get that book?
On Amazon.com.
Amazon.com.
Yes. So.
Great.
Yeah. But we can talk about that in maybe another episode.
That would be really great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I am so excited that this is, that I get to talk to you on your first podcast, Beyond Yoga. It's very, I feel very honored and humbled. And
well, thank you. And thank you for your contribution to making this all happen.
You're welcome. This is something that the world, that like we can all benefit from, and that I want more people to be able to enjoy.
Hear, hear. Namaste.
Namaste.